You know what can be hard? Talking about your marriage on a podcast that lots of people will listen to. And that's what Kate and I attempt to do on this show occasionally from time to time. And we're going to do a lot of it in season three, but we're not quite there yet. So that's why we've been running these rebroadcasts because we think, hey, we've made some good stuff in the past and maybe you missed it. And so we want you to catch up. So this one is all about the myth of Christian marriage. What was it like for Kate and I to come from these conservative evangelical tribes that handed us a particular way of thinking about marriage and us telling our story of walking into those narratives together and slowly but surely dismantling those. So it's a good one. Check it out. Follow us at Kate and Colby on all of your social media platforms. Subscribe and get ready because season three is around the corner.
Last month, Colby and I celebrated our 14th wedding anniversary. Each year on our anniversary, I like to reflect quite a bit about what we've learned over our years. And this year, thinking about 14 years of marriage, I was thinking so much about how, well, Colby and I often reflect about how if we were to get married today, if today Colby and I were to plan a wedding with each other, how different it would be. It would be different in so many ways. Our relationship is different, so we would be different with each other. We would treat each other differently. We would probably fight differently. Better, healthier, happy to report. But so many things about our actual wedding day would be so different. I would pick such a different dress. We would have actual champagne at our wedding instead of, I think we had root beer floats at our wedding because, you know, you don't do alcohol back in the day in our strict upbringing. So instead of toasting with champagne, we toasted with root beer floats, which, hey, I love a good root beer float, so I ain't complaining. But I think now if we were to get married, we would go full on champagne. I'm pretty sure we would have a taco truck instead of some sort of fancy schmancy catering business that we didn't even eat that day. Just so many things about the style and our preferences. I'm pretty sure we'd have a smaller event with our close personal friends, instead of making it this big lavish event. It would just be so different. And as I was reflecting on how different our wedding day would be, nowadays, if we planned it today, I was thinking about how different we are as people. And I was picturing those kids, I mean, really kids, standing there 14 years ago, at that wedding, standing there under the trees, pledging their undying love to each other. And I was thinking about all of the things that I wish I could scream at those kids. If I could say to Colby and Kate of 14 years ago, hey dudes, you're too young to do this for starters. You're way too young. You are way too young. You are kids. You haven't grown up yet. You can't pledge your life to each other and make babies and raise kids. I would have so many words to say to those kids about the upbringing that they had and how that will affect them in their relationship with each other. You raise a boy and a girl in a patriarchal culture and then you put them together in a marriage. Oh, I would have so many words to say, especially to myself. Oh, I'd be like, sweet Kate, you got to stand up for yourself. You got to make sure you're not the only one doing chores. Oh, I would just have so many words to say about the way that I wanted to be treated and seen and experienced and held space for in our marriage. And I would just say so many words to both those people standing there under those trees 14 years ago about all that they didn't know. They were so ignorant and they were so naive and they just didn't have a clue about the world and about the way that each of their own personal heaps of baggage would affect their relationship with each other and all that they would come to struggle with. And I was thinking about that, about all the words that I wish I could say to them. And it occurred to me in such a powerful way that the truth is, if I was given the opportunity, if somebody said to me, look, I've got this time machine, for real, it's legit, and you could go back and you could tell Colby and Kate of 14 years ago, you could tell them everything that they don't know. You could warn them of all that is to come. You could explain to them that they're full of shit. You could tell them that they are going to treat each other like shit. You could tell them to stop and to not and to be careful of this and be mindful of that. If somebody offered that to me, if that was like actually like really legitimately possible, the truth is, I really mean this, I wouldn't do it. I actually wouldn't do it. Yes, I feel inside me this urge to go back and be like, you guys, you don't know. But ultimately where I land is I wouldn't warn them of a single thing. I would not say one word to those kids, because life and relationship, but really just all of life, are about the journey and the reckoning. Oh, the sweet reckoning. And everything that is good about my life, everything that is sweet and perfect and happy about my marriage to Colby 14 years later, rests on the fact that we have had a hell of a lot of reckoning. If someone had warned us, if someone had told us what was to come, if we had been wiser, stronger, smarter, if we had been emotionally healthier people, we'd miss out on all that reckoning. And the reckoning is everything. It's what makes us who we are. It's what makes our relationship so solid that we've been to hell and back. We've been to the absolute ends of ourselves. We've been to rock bottom. And humans have this funny way of seeing life that just really misses the point. We think that if we could just find this way to escape tragedy and problems and difficulties and struggle, that would be the ultimate life, right? That would be like the best. And so we want to go back and save our old selves. We want to go tell our younger, sweet selves all the wisdom. If only I had known then what I know now. But the truth is, that's not the way life works. Everything beautiful and everything good comes from the reckoning. It comes from the struggle and the pain and the not knowing, and then the journey of knowing. And so I wouldn't go back and tell those sweet kids anything at all, because every little bit of the pain that has come from all the things we didn't know and all the things that we were about to blindly step into is just everything good about my life. And I just encourage you today, if you can think through, if you are in a place of pain, tragedy, struggle, to try to remember that years from now, you're not going to want to go back and tell yourself anything. You're just going to treasure the reckoning. You're going to see it as everything good in your life.
This is the part of the show we call Chaotic Peace, where we explore some of the more chaotic parts of life, from marriage to parenting, relationships, community, and religion, and we share some ideas on how you can find more peace. Oh, babe, that was a fantastic nugget, and I want to now talk about it. Can we talk about it for this segment?
Yeah, that's going to be our chaotic piece for
Let me start with a question.
Okay.
You talk about how the reckoning that we have experienced in our marriage, especially in the last couple of years, has given you this wisdom to know that were you given a time machine to go back in time, you would not warn us or do any of those things, okay? But can you, what if this was 2 years ago before we had the reckoning, and we were in
one of our biggest, right? Yeah.
And we were in just the mire. We were in the muck, and someone offered you a time machine to go warn your 20-year-old self. How do you think you would respond then? Because I imagine that some of our listeners are in that place.
Well, that's exactly why I shared that nugget, because remember I said at the end, I'm like, if you are in it right now, try to remember that years from now, because that's, you're exactly right. Like, that question is profound. Yes. Because you're right. If when I was in the deepest, which I think is what you're asking, if I was 2 years ago in the deepest depths of despair in our relationship with each other, in our marriage, if someone had offered me a chance to go back and proactively make that not happen for us. Yeah. When you're in deep pain, I have to be honest, I probably would just, it's the wisdom only comes after, I mean, hindsight, right? Like hindsight is always 2020. I think that's why I offer that wisdom to people who are in it right now. because the truth is we don't have that option anyway, right? Yeah, right. It's not like that does exist. Does it? Does anybody out there have a time machine? So, I think the answer is absolutely. If in the deepest depths of despair, there truly was like an angel from heaven offering this chance. Yeah, absolutely. I think anybody would relent when they're in that kind of pain. Hmm. But on the other side of it, that's where that wisdom comes from of seeing the beauty from ashes.
No, that makes sense. We got married in the deep contextual situation of like conservative, religious, like patriarchal, mud. Yeah. I kind of don't even know how to wrap that up, but that, yeah. Like, so when we got married, we had clear roles.
Yeah.
So I was head of household. Mm-hmm. As you talked about in our pilot episode, you were pastor's wife.
Yeah.
And we played these roles, and we, by the way, we want to talk about in this chaotic peace segment, we want to talk about, the myth of Christian marriage, and maybe the is the wrong article. It should be like a myth of Christian marriage.
There's lots of myths of Christian marriage. We'll get to some other ones later.
Yeah, and one of them related to your nugget that you shared. But I think one of the myths that we were given, and I don't know if I want to say it was given explicitly. Maybe it was. I don't know how good my memory is around that. If it was like
I have stated. I have memories of explicit.
So you can share that. But the myth, I don't know. One way to describe it would be like a good prayer life, mm-hmm. consistent church attendance and Bible study, and moral living mm-hmm. are adequate measures to ensure that your marriage will be good and your relationship will thrive.
Yeah.
Like that was kind of the system that we were handed.
Yeah. So if you struggle, which you will freaking struggle. Yep. Yeah.
Especially
so
if you get married at 21 and 20. People.
Yeah. Yeah. But no matter what, if you're in a relationship with another human being, it does not, again, we like to remind everyone that we're talking about our relationship. That's a particular, but we hope everyone can find the universal. So no matter what relationship you're in, you're going to find struggle, period. Right. And so when you were in the context that you and I were in, if you found struggle, you immediately went to your spiritual life to figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'm not praying enough. And maybe that was never a conscious thought, but it was deeply rooted. It was ingrained in you. Like, I'm not praying enough. I'm not enough. It even went, for me, it went to the depths of I'm not enough. I mean, I'm still doing that work with my therapist of the message I was sent in our marriage was I'm not enough because I can't make this work through my own spiritual practice. Like my spiritual practice is supposed to make sure that you and I thrive in relationship, and that's it. You shouldn't have to seek any sort of outside help.
The messaging being, you know, I'm just cherry picking a Jesus verse here, but seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness and all these things will be provided unto you. So whatever it is you need.
I remember having that posted in our bathroom. Remember that first apartment we lived in? When we first got married in Salem, mm-hmm. I was working at the daycare. You were finishing up college. Yep. I had that written on a piece of paper and tacked on our bathroom wall.
Wow.
That scripture. I can't believe you just pulled that right now because I literally had that because that was absolutely it. That was the belief. If you seek the most important thing first, God first, then your relationship.
Everything else will line up. And, you know, neither one of us are you. It's not like we're not super cynical or jaded by it. I think we understand the earnest.
Well, I might be a little bit.
No, that's fair. I just mean like we're not looking down our noses at that sort of philosophy. I think what we're saying is it's not for us. It wasn't true.
Right.
So that's one thing is it didn't actually work out.
Well,
that
that's what happens is people suffer because they're told that that's true. And so then when their marriage is a mess, even though they're praying all the time, they're going to church every week, they're doing their thing, they're putting, you know, air quotes, God first, then they just feel like they're going crazy. Like they're not enough.
Cause it's I think it's just misleading. And it's misleading to think that, marriages and relationships will just sort of work themselves out if you put God first. And so
So what was it for us?
For us, it was putting a therapist first, really. I mean,
seek ye first
the counsel of a counselor. But I mean, that was
of a licensed therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So there was shame, and there is shame within so many Christian marriages and relationships. There's shame around this idea of getting help.
Yeah.
That the idea is that for marriages that need help, that need couples counseling or whatever, they must be doing it wrong.
Right.
They must be.
It's their fault.
Their relationship is broken and must need fixed.
Right.
And I just think that's why for years, even though you were pleading for us to do that, for me to do that.
That's part of my I'm more okay in the pain and darkness stuff that I talked about in the pilot episode. Like, I got the benefit of that. Even though I was raised in that culture where you don't talk about the hard stuff. You don't. That's part of this culture we're talking about, is you don't talk about how your marriage sucks. You don't name it.
Mm-mm.
Right?
Yeah. And for me to make that call to the therapist and to step out of the van and across the threshold of their office and sit down on that couch.
That was for in itself. Me, yeah.
That communicates failure. It communicated failure.
Did you feel that consciously in the moment when we were first doing that?
Oh, that's a good question. I know that I didn't do it for years because of that.
Yeah.
Like that was, I couldn't admit failure. And you know, we can talk about that some episode. Just how
we had to hit rock bottom for you to acquiesce to my request to go to therapy.
I think that word failure is super charged because in many ways I'm rejecting this idea that you go to therapy and it means you failed. But in truth, our marriage had failed.
Right.
And so we were going. So it's kind of this weird, I don't know. It's just two sides of this coin.
Yeah.
The fear of acknowledging failure. And yet I think what I'm trying to say is it's not a failure to admit that you need help.
Right.
Like that's not the failing.
Right.
That's
I would argue the absolute opposite, that you are finally getting there when you can admit that you have a hard time and you need help. That's empowerment right there. That's what makes you powerful. That is not a failure at all. That makes you a powerful human being. Like it's fun to have this conversation with you because you struggle anyway with that idea of failure, right? Of needing to perform and be good and not have anyone know that you struggle. Mm-hmm. That's a thing for you. And then we're talking about the culture of that. Like our church built that culture up to like...
Yeah, it's spiritualized make that
extra.
It.
Yes. Yeah. Which... experts say that anytime you have any sort of shaming at all, if you add a spiritual aspect to it, you times the shame by like, I don't know the numbers, but a lot. So, you already struggle with a little bit of shame and then you take a spiritual aspect to it and it just makes it unbearable.
Yeah.
And then what's interesting is that we were in a context where you can't name it. You can't say that you have struggle. And then when we started going to therapy, when we finally hit rock bottom and acquiesced, we were in a community where we were teaching people it's okay to name that you struggle.
Yeah.
That it's okay to be honest, to show up to church and have somebody say, "How are you?" and to answer,
"I wish I wasn't here right now."
Yeah. That's the culture that we were building and simultaneously in our home learning to do that ourselves, to be honest with each other, to be honest with the self and say, yep, I struggle. This sucks.
So maybe your piece today begins by being okay enough to name that your relationship is needing help. Like maybe that's the beginning of your piece. The chaos of your relationship, you can say, it is not a failure to admit that we need help. And especially if you have some sort of Christian history in your relationship, mm-hmm. please know that there is going to be layers of shame that we long for you to break free from, but they're going to be there and they're going to be holding you back with these messages of with enough prayer and putting God first, things will work out. But that just doesn't always work.
Yeah. Yep. It's okay for things to just suck and to just say this sucks. Oh, and what I was going to say when I was saying how it's interesting to have this conversation with you because you struggled with the shame issues around admitting that it was hard more than I did. What I want to come back around full circle and name is that, and the truth that I've stumbled upon and that you are starting to see and trust from me and accept is that I've never been more attracted to you, more proud of you, more in love with you, more moved by you, been in more admiration of you than when you have admitted that you are struggling or even said, I'm failing at this. Like, that's the beautiful thing about it that people need to understand is that we think we have to avoid the struggle. And that's what you were fighting for so long. And you were fighting it because you thought that I wouldn't like you anymore that's right. if you admitted that you struggle.
Yeah.
And the beautiful truth about it is that I've never liked you more than when you finally admitted to me that you struggle. Yep, that's your peace in the chaos.
We call this part of the show Coming Alive, and every episode, each of us is going to recommend to you a book, a movie, a song, or something that we've consumed recently that is helping to make us come more alive.
The day after 45 won the election and became president, our family went and saw the movie Trolls.
As you do.
And I have to tell you, that could have been the best decision that we've ever made in our entire lives.
Was the day after? I think it was the day of.
I was in Kentucky the day of. So I flew home.
Oh, that's right.
And we went and saw the movie
that's
Trolls.
That's a whole other story.
And it was salve for the open, gaping wound. Mm-hmm. But here's why I bring it up today, which is like 9 months after it came out. Because we kind of watch it in our house maybe once a week. We were watching it the other
obsessed.
Day. And so if you haven't seen it yet, here's a little bit of a spoiler alert. But the basic premise is that there are antagonists in the movie that are called Bergens, kind of these, I almost said troll-like figures, but the trolls are the protagonists. Anyways, these kind of like monster type things. And they're convinced that the only way they can be happy in life is to eat a troll. And everything else about their life sucks. They walk around miserable, lonely, angry, and they're convinced the only way they can find happiness is to eat a troll. And I was watching this, you know, for the umpteenth time the other day, and I'm like, what an incredible picture of the gospel. And here's why. And yes,
the
it is
the gospel of trolls.
It is annoying to watch movies with me because that's how my mind works. But here's why it's making me come alive is because I'm reminded that there is nothing that you have to do to be fully present and enveloped by the love of God. There's nothing that you actually have to do. But many of us have been sold this idea that we are fundamentally disconnected from the divine and that there's something that you have to do to bridge that gap. Even if it's to say there's nothing you can do, but Jesus did it. And so now the thing that you have to do is to have faith in Jesus or accept Jesus or do a prayer. That's still a thing that you have to do. You're still fundamentally disconnected from the divine. And so you have to do something to be in God's presence or being earn God's favor or whatever it is. And this is what the Bergens believed, is that I am fundamentally disconnected from happiness. I cannot be happy unless I eat a troll. And the movie, breaks that myth down and shows that for the Bergen, happiness is within you, and you can actually find happiness. And you don't. It doesn't take eating a troll. I apologize for the spoiler alert. But you'll still love the movie regardless. And I just think that is one of the most impactful things that the church can be reclaiming, because I'll just be honest with you, we've lost the point, we've lost the plot. Like, we have, Jesus tried to communicate that. He tried to argue with the Pharisees who wanted to tell people they had to do the holiness code and be pure in order to connect with the divine. Like, that was Jesus' whole thing, is you're not disconnected from the divine. And then the religion that got built up in his name created these things that you had to do to be connected to the divine.
Meanwhile, he was like, within.
Yes, within. Yeah. And so, anyway, that's why for today, I'm saying, you know what? If you haven't seen Trolls, please watch it. You will love it. If you've already seen it, watch it again and just pay attention to that.
Yeah, have new eyes.
Yeah, to that beautiful truth okay, that it is preach. Within you.
And also, I just had this huge epiphany while you were talking. Answer me this question. Who taught the Bergens that is within, that happiness is within?
Poppy.
Who's Poppy?
The main troll.
A troll. They believed they had to eat trolls to become happy, right?
Yeah.
So the creatures that were oppressed by these people with these rotten beliefs Ooh. Were the ones that taught them the real gospel.
Preach.
I'm sorry. There's something the really in that, right?
The oppressed brought liberation to the oppressors.
I just freaked out when you were talking just now because I realized that.
Get
That's
out
so
of
cool.
my face. That okay. was fantastic.
Also, who's your favorite troll?
I love Poppy.
Poppy.
I love Poppy. What about you?
Branch. I mean, I'm an Enneagram 4. Of course I love Branch. He's like dark. His classic. Actual color and being is different through the whole movie. He's unique and different through the entire movie from any other troll. He doesn't do any of the things they want to do. He's the individualist.
Yeah.
That's the Enneagram 4 for those who don't know. He's the individualist. And beyond that, I mean, he's a total Enneagram 4, right?
Yeah.
He is like in his darkness, in his pain. He's experienced death at an early age, which if you've listened to this podcast, you know that's like,
wow.
That's me.
You would love Branch.
Right?
That's true.
He's
yeah.
me. He's everything. And then he comes full circle and he finds a way that he comes alive, right? And his color actually like yeah. literally changes, yeah. but also his being changes. But it changes only through experiencing that his very pain is what makes him like come more alive. Mm. Like it just couldn't be more me. I love Branch so much.
And then but his reckoning saves the other trolls.
Yes. Oh, I couldn't love it more. Trolls is the
you
best.
You with the sad eyes.
Oh my God.
Okay, sorry.
All right.
What about you, babe? What is making you come alive?
Pink. Pink makes me come alive. I mean, she I always.
Say
pink,
more.
Pink always makes me come more alive. Always. Always, always, always from the day that she like first came out with her very first song, she's made me come alive. I just love the woman in every way. But she's coming out with her, I think it's her first album in like 5 years. She hasn't done anything for a while. She's had babies and she's amazing. She's an incredible mom and she like posts pictures of herself breastfeeding and stuff. She's just my idol. I just love her. So she's coming out with a new album and she's released a single from it already. What About Us? If you have not listened to that song, have you
I
heard it yet?
No.
Oh my God. The kids and I just blasted on the way to church and I'm like, well, I've already done church. I don't need to go now. Like it's so good. It's so good. She's just amazing. But the thing that's most made me come alive about her, I mean, her period, like follow her Insta. She's amazing. Amazing mom, amazing woman, fierce advocate for like all human beings. And the music is coming out October. I think it's October 13th is Beautiful Trauma, her next album. And she's released the single What About Us and it's beautiful. But the thing that's most making me come alive about her right now, beyond absolutely idolizing her, was her speech at the VMAs. Have you heard it?
No,
have you
seen it? Tell
oh my
me about
God.
It.
Oh my God. So I'm going to cry talking about it. Because she talks about her daughter and her daughter's sitting there on her husband's lap, on her dad's lap. And she shares how, she was taking her daughter to school one day and her daughter said, "Mommy, I'm going to botch this. You got to look up on YouTube Pink's VMA speech." But she said, "Mommy, I'm the ugliest girl. I look like a boy with long hair." And Pink was like having that mom moment of, "What did you just say?" Like she wanted to go to her daughter's school and like kick some 5-year-old ass, right? Because mm-hmm. you assume that your daughter's getting these messages from the correctly assume that your daughter's getting these messages from her schoolmates and whatnot. But she said she maintained her cool and she went home and made her daughter a PowerPoint presentation. Mm-hmm. And she filled it with images of rock stars and she filled it with images of androgynous rock stars.
Wow.
And, you know, people like, Prince and, Michael Jackson and you got to look it up. She names more people. And she talks about how it's all these artists who have lived into who they really are, and she names specifically all these what she calls the androgynous rock stars. And she's like, they get made fun of, honey, all the time. She speaks right to her daughter. And she's like, and the video pans to her daughter. And she's just got this like happy little face. And she's like, honey, she speaks about herself and she's like, does mommy have, I forget what she says, like short hair or whatever. And does mommy, you know, look like, air quotes, boy or whatever. And she's like, do I get made fun of? Yes. And she's like, does mommy sell out concerts all over the world? And her daughter's like, yes. And she's like, exactly. Like all these stars have gotten made fun of every day of their lives and they just continue being who they are and they don't fit some sort of gender. And you know, that's my thing. I'm like, yeah. Oh God. Anyway, you have to look it up. You have to watch her speech. It's incredible to see her daughter just sitting there and the way that she speaks to these incredible artists that I hadn't ever thought about that before, really the impact of these artists who make music, who make art and who don't fit our society's standards of what gender is supposed to be. And when she spoke to that, and she's this woman who like always has her head like half shaved and her hair super short and just wears whatever the fuck she wants. Sorry. I sobbed through it and then I watched it again and sobbed through it and then watched it again and sobbed through it. It's so moving. And I mean, I know that I'm obsessed with Pink anyway, so that's part of it, but, such a role model. She's just incredible. I blast her music to the kids and talk about her and show pictures of her to the kids. And she inspired me with that whole, you know, the artists who live who they are. Like, I want to show the kids more of that, of people who don't fit the boxes that society creates and be like, and look at what they're doing, that they're selling. The fact that she connected that to like, and am I selling out concerts all over the world, honey? Yes, I am. And just like, do your thing. Oh, so good. And she swears in her songs and we still blast them. Remember that one day when I was playing Pink a whole bunch and Huck was like, I've had a shit day. I've had a shit day. And I was like, oh, whoops. Oh,
well. Mommy, what's a shit day?
We'll talk more about kids and cussing some other time. But yeah. Pink makes me come alive. Go check it out. VMAs. So great.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Kate and Colby Show. To learn more about us or hear past episodes, to send us a question or a comment, just visit thekateandcolbyshow.com. And just make sure to subscribe to the podcast while you're there. That would be super easy. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded and produced here in San Diego by Matthew Blake.